Okay, what I'd like to look at today is something which is kind of a larger question that sits in the back of the whole story of Yitzchak, Esav, Yaakov, Rivka, stolen bracha, etc., which I have not really seen anybody ask. And it is a question that Esav asks and kind of doesn't get answered. And if you think about the entire story of the theft of the bracha, the deception of the bracha, the alternate gifting of the bracha, however you want to call it with all the PC terms, there's something kind of strange about it, which is, I mean, I don't know about you, whether you have this minhag, but we have the minhag in my house where I give brachot Friday night, and I don't run out of brachot. And I don't have my kids fighting. I don't have everybody dressing up to pretend to be Yossi so they can get there first. Right? I mean, kind of a giveaway that he's hasn't been home for 7 years. But, you know, it's a very strange thing. So I want to start off with this pasuk in Mishlei, which maybe will help guide us. And it's a pasuk that is actually used in a very strenuous or strained machloket that happens also in this week's parasha at the very end of chapter 25. The last verse is where Esav has sold the bechorah, and so he eats and he drinks and he degrades the bechorah. And that's where the Ibn Ezra comes with this famous statement where he says Yitzchak was poor. And he brings arguments that Yitzchak was poor. First of all, that's why Esav said, "What do I need a bechorah for?" And that's why when they sent Yaakov away, they sent him with barely anything on his back. And that's why Yitzchak loved Esav because Esav would feed him. And that's why Yaakov was making food because there's no servants, etc. The Ramban jumps on the Ibn Ezra with both feet and takes apart each one of these statements. And the Ramban's position is that the Avot were all royalty, they were nobility, they were wealthy. Yitzchak is clearly a wealthy man from the fact that Avraham is attested to be wealthy and he bequeaths everything to Yitzchak, etc. It's an interesting machloket considering also the personal lives of the two mefarshim involved. We're not going to get into that, but in the Ramban's response to the Ibn Ezra, he cites this pasuk: "Barbirkat Adonai hi ta'ashir v'leisiv etzav imayim." The first part, the part that's highlighted, is the part that he focuses on, which is Hashem's bracha gives you wealth. Now, there's several ways to read this. One of them is to say that if you are wealthy, it's because Hashem blessed you. Okay. Another way to read it is to say that the impact of having the bracha of Hashem is that you'll become wealthy. But perhaps the simplest way to read it is that's what the bracha is, meaning wealth is the bracha. So when Hashem says to Avraham, "Vavarechacha," it means I'm going to make you wealthy. And that therefore, since Hashem blessed Yitzchak, that means Yitzchak ipso facto is wealthy. And since Hashem's bracha doesn't go away, Yitzchak can never be poor. And that's a big part of his argument. So that's I bring that here because I want you to file that in the back of your minds, and within 20 minutes or so, we're going to see how that makes a significant appearance here. Okay. Going back to the story of Rivka in Haran and Rivka leaves. When Rivka leaves at age 14 or so, and her family sends her away with her nursemaid doesn't mean a woman who's nursing her, right? It means a woman who is the hired slave who's going to nurse her babies that she's going to have. And they send them away, they give her a bracha. What's the bracha they give her? Achotenu, at hayil alfei revavah. So the first one is straightforward. It's a bracha of becoming the mother of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. V'yirash zareich et shar sonav. What's the other part of the bracha? Is your children should conquer the gate, meaning the city of their enemies. In other words, a bracha of power and sovereignty. And of course, of fertility. Okay, so again, file that away as we move ahead. Now, the first scene we need to look at, because these scenes are inextricably tied together, you can't unweave them, is the scene of the porridge and the bechorah, whatever that is. All right, and in that scene, what happens is that Yaakov, and just as a side note about this, we hear that Yitzchak favors Esav because Esav feeds him. Keep that in mind. That's going to be critical. It makes Yitzchak sound like he's some sort of old gluttonous man whose son brings him his favorite food, and that's why he likes him, and that's why he favors him over the far more virtuous Yaakov. It's obviously much more than that. And now, when you get to Pasuk Chavtet, here's the story. Yaakov is cooking porridge, cooking lentil soup, and Esav comes from the field, and he's hungry. Now, the word ayef in Tanakh means tired and hungry, so that's why I'm translating it that way. Why is Yaakov cooking? So it sounds like, well, why wouldn't he be cooking? And the answer is very simple. If we're talking about a wealthy family, which according to the Ramban, then a slave should be cooking. And if not, then we would assume that Rivka would be cooking. Why is Yaakov cooking?
Isn't that it was Avram's shiva or something? No?
So there's all sorts of midrashic takes on that, and that's why lentils and they're round and avelut, correct. But simple pshat, why is he cooking? And it seems that even though I'm going to mute you guys because there's some background noise, or if you can mute yourself. It seems that even though Yaakov was a shepherd, Yoshev Orel, and Esav is a hunter, that even though the prophecy was that they would be separate and struggle against each other, at this point in their life, they're actually partners. And they've gone out, and Yaakov has gone herding, and Esav has gone hunting, and he's had an unsuccessful day at the hunt, and he comes into the tent that Yaakov has set up, and Yaakov is making food, because Yaakov is the guy in the tent who watches the sheep. And so Esav says to him, give me some of that red stuff, or better yet, give me some of that red stuff, and because I'm hungry. And that's the little note that's why he's called Edom, the Edomite nation. Okay, what does Yaakov do? Yaakov says, I will give you the porridge, the soup, if you agree to sell the Bechorah. The Radak here, I think, is pshat. He says the price of the Bechorah was not soup. The price of the Bechorah was a price they would arrive at later, but the willingness to sell the Bechorah, that's what the soup was for, meaning selling it. But now, well, how can you sell a Bechorah? I cannot come up to my parents, may they rest in peace, and say to them, I am now the oldest child in the family. I happen to be the baby in the family. You can't change birth order. So what is it that Yaakov wants to buy from Esav? So clearly, he wants to buy some future rights. I know they're future rights because Esav says, I have no use for the Bechorah because I'm going to die, whatever that may mean. I have a dangerous profession, I'm so hungry, whatever it is, which means in the future, there's nothing for me, no advantage to me having this Bechorah. So, what is this Bechorah? And so the simplest explanation would be the right to inherit more than the other brother, because the Torah law is Bechor inherits double portion. Right, so somehow they think, or maybe at this time it's possible, to actually swap that and say, I'm going to pay you money now, like futures, and you're going to sell me the rights to the double inheritance. However, before the time of the Torah, the Bechor did not inherit double. Before the time of the Torah, the Bechor inherited everything. Right, so we have to keep in mind, what is it that's going on here? And of course, the question is, what's Yaakov angling for here? We move on to the critical story, which is chapter 27. The whole story takes place in chapter 27. Yitzchak is old. He thinks he's going to die because he's going blind. So he calls Esav and he says to him the following, Lo yadati yom moti. I don't know when I'm going to die. Go take your bow and arrow, go out and shoot me some game, and prepare it the way I like, so that I will bless you before I die. Now, this is a very strange statement, because if Yitzchak thinks he's going to die, we expect a scene like Yaakov, with whoever children he has that are in the fold, standing around his deathbed and giving them ethical advice, last will and testament, conferring things upon them in the family. And if he's just giving a bracha, why can't he give a bracha to both kids? Because why at this point does he not turn to Rivka and say, Rivka, go tell Yaakov, your favorite boy, to go prepare some soup for me, or I don't know what, and I'll give him a bracha too. And the entire scene is about tussling over a single bracha that, to quote Esav, and the title of the shir, HaBracha Chati L'Chavid, you only have one bracha. But that seems to be the reality. So now as we move further into the story, Rivka now tells Yaakov in source 4, Rivka tells Yaakov, go to the flock and get me 2 goats, and I'll prepare them the way your father likes, and you'll bring it to your father, and he'll bless you. Now, at this point in time, reading the story, not knowing anything later, which is the way you have to read the story. You read the story and let it occupy you just in present time. Rivka tells Yaakov, go bring food, and I'll prepare it, and you'll bring it to father, and he'll bless you. And at that point, it sounds like Rivka's saying, today is bracha day. Bring father food, get a bracha. Esav's going, you go too. Watch what Yaakov says in Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer Yaakov al Rivka imo, hein Esav achi ish tzair v'anochi ish chalak. Yaakov says, my brother is hairy and I am smooth of skin. Ulayim usheni yavi v'ayti benav kim tatea. Maybe father will embrace me and I will then look like a trickster. And I'll end up bringing a curse instead of a blessing on myself. What does he mean? You know, why isn't it the case that he can come to father and say, hi, I'm Yaakov. I brought some food too. I want a bracha too. In other words, what Yaakov assumes here is that if he's going to bring food, that he's going to have to pretend to be Esav, and he's afraid he's going to get caught. By the way, notice Yaakov does not seem to have ethical qualms about lying to his father. He has utilitarian problems, which is, I might get caught. But that's a whole different shear that goes in with Yaakov's reaction to Shimon Levi and Shechem, etc. What does Rivka say? Rivka concurs. She doesn't say, oh, no, you got it wrong. You're not supposed to pretend to be somebody else. She concurs. She says, yes, you might get cursed, but if you get cursed, I'll take it on myself. Right? So, the curse is on me, but, all right, and whatever that may mean, and there's big discussion about that. Okay, so now, Yaakov gets the goats, Rivka prepares them, Rivka puts the garments on Yaakov, Yaakov's about to approach Yitzchak, and Jason wants to approach the question. Go ahead.
Is the Shema Bekoli have anything to do with, like, the fact that that phrase is used a lot?
Shema Bekoli just means obey me.
That's I know, but I'm saying that specific use of that terminology, you see that a lot coming up in Devarim where you keep saying, shh, you know, listen to my voice. Is there anything?
Where else do you see it?
No, not in this story. You see it later on.
I know. Where else do you see it? It's not that. Okay.
I'll come up with it.
Okay, good. So now, Yaakov comes to Yitzchak pretending to be Esav, and he says, I am Esav, and Yitzchak is blind. So Yitzchak somehow is confused, doubtful. According to some Rishonim, he even is in on it. He knows it's Yaakov. And he says, Kshana ushkal b'ni, come close and give me a kiss, embrace me. Gashva yishaklo v'rechad v'rechadah v'recheu. This pasuk is strange because it seems to be out of order. The smell of my son is like the smell of the field. Okay. And then what does he say? And this is the culmination. This is the bracha that evidently is a soul bracha, S-O-L-E, besides S-O-U-L. And that is the one bracha that either Yaakov or Esav is going to get. Yitzchak wants Esav to get it. And Yaakov has gone quickly and gotten the goats, and Rivka's prepared them, and they're all in on the scheme that Yaakov should get it instead. Not along with, but instead. And there's one bracha. Okay, now when you are in the book of Bereshit and you talk bracha, what immediately comes to mind? 2 things, which are the land of Canaan and lots of kids. That is the bracha that Hashem gives Abraham several times. That is the bracha that Hashem gives to Yitzchak following Avraham. It's the bracha that Hashem gives to Yaakov at Beit El. It is the bracha of Bereshit. We're going to call it Birkat Avraham because that's where it starts. The land of Canaan to your many, many descendants. Lots of kids and the land. Zera and Eretz. What's the bracha here? God should give you from the dew of heaven, the fat of the land, Rov Dagan v'tirosh. lots of bread and wine. These are material blessings that could be had anywhere. There's nothing about kids. There's nothing about land, except the produce of the land. And then a real surprise. Ya'avducha amim. Nations should serve you. Mishtachavu lecha le'umim. And that should remind us of the bracha that Rivka got that she evidently didn't share with Yitzchak, which is lo'om mi'lo'om yamatz. One nation will struggle with another. Nations will bow to you. Havegvir le'achecha. You will be a lord over your brothers, which evidently means your brother and maybe other family members. Mishtachavu lecha b'nei mecha. And the sons of your mother will bow to you, which means you're going to be the lord in the family. Anybody who curses you is cursed, and who blesses you is blessed. That's a nice little chatima. So what is this bracha? So this bracha very clearly is a bracha of power. It's a bracha of lordship. As a bracha of wealth and prosperity, it is not the bracha of Abraham. Now notice that this is the bracha that Yitzchak intended to give to Esav. Now, this is the scene that we're picking up on. Esav immediately comes in. It's one of these exit right, exit lefts. Exit left, enter right, sorry. Yaakov leaves, and as he leaves, Esav comes in with his food. And he comes to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak freaks out. He starts shaking and trembling, and he says, oh my gosh, somebody came and took your bracha. And then he utters this strange phrase. So let's take a look at it. He says, Gam baruchiyah, the fellow who came and took your blessing is blessed. Now, by the way, that's another conundrum. How can a bracha, whether it's the only bracha or part of a group of brachot, how can a bracha that is given under false pretenses work? How can it hold? Some guy sneaks into my house and pretends to be one of my kids and dress up like the kids, and it's dark, the electricity's gone out, and I give him a bracha. Does it mean anything? Of course not. Why is this bracha meaningful? Now, what Esav's reaction here is, when Yitzchak realizes it's Yaakov who's come, your brother came deceptively and took your bracha. And Esav, being a brilliant linguist, says that's why his name is Yaakov. He has ambushed me twice, because that's what the word Yaakov means also, besides heel. And he says, first of all, he took my bechora, and now he took my bracha. And then he turns to his father and says, Halo atzalta li bracha. You owe me a bracha. You have to give me a bracha. So Yitzchak turns around and says, I can't. He's your boss. And what does Esav say back? Havaracha achat hi lecha avi. You only have one bracha? Barcheni gamani avi. And he's like a kid pouting. Give me a bracha too. And finally, what does Yitzchak do? He gives him a back kind of bracha. He says, okay, you'll also have land. You'll also have food. You'll also have stuff, but you're going to live by the sword. And if your brother messes up, you could take over. But it's such a left-handed bracha. So what is going on here? What is going on with this bracha? And the very end of the parasha is this, and we're going to sew it all up together very quickly. Esav wants to kill Yaakov. Rivka overhears it, and Rivka says to Yaakov, get out of town. Go to Lavan and hide there, and I'll call you back. Whatever Rivka's real intentions are, is something else. She can't tell Yitzchak, Esav's going to kill Yaakov. So she tells Yitzchak instead, my daughters-in-law are making me sick. If Yaakov marries a girl like this, I'm going to put my head in the oven. And so Yitzchak summons Yaakov and sends him to Lavan to marry one of Lavan's daughters, or two. And the idea is to do the same thing that he sort of did, take a wife from the family from Haran. What does Yitzchak say to Yaakov when he knows it's Yaakov and he gives him a bracha? The El Shaddai v'rechot chav yafrechav yabecha v'itat lekalamim, big nation. God should give you the bracha of Abraham, which is to inherit this land. Which means the following. When Yitzchak knows it's Yaakov, he passes on Birkat Abraham. When he thought it was Esav, he gave him something else. What was that something else? And I think the answer is actually fairly straightforward. The word bracha can mean a lot of different things. It doesn't necessarily follow a formula and necessarily have one kind of intent. The bracha that Yitzchak wants to give Esav before he dies is to establish him and install him as in charge of the estate. Why does Yitzchak favor Esav? Because Yitzchak is looking to the future and saying, one day I'm going to die and somebody has to take over, and the person who takes over has to be the person best suited to take over. I've got a son who is a farmer and a hunter, which means if there's rain, we have crops, and if there isn't, we have food. And so that's why he wants Esav to take over. He never intended Esav to be the one who would carry on the tradition of Abraham. That's Yaakov all the way, no question. But he intended Esav to be the guy in charge of the estate. So what does he do before he dies? When he thinks he's about to die, he says, Esav, go bring me food, we'll have a little ceremony, and I'll install you as in charge of the estate. Rivka understands that, because Rivka understands that in order for this family to succeed, they can't have bifurcated leadership. It's got to all be in the hands of Yaakov. So what does Yaakov do? Yaakov tricks father with Rivka's help. So father gives the bracha of power, installs Yaakov as in charge of the family. Why does it work? It works for a very simple reason. Until now, Yitzchak thought that Esav was more fit to lead the family because he is the more resourceful person. What does Yitzchak realize when Esav comes in and says, my brother took my bracha? Yitzchak concurs that Yaakov is the more resourceful person. That Yaakov uses his strengths. His strengths may not be sharpshooting, and his strengths may not be brawn. His strengths are brains. But he knows how to use his strengths to get what he needs to get. This does not justify what Yaakov did. I'm not getting into that problem. But on practical level, Yitzchak realizes that Yaakov is more fit to lead the family because look at how successfully he just got his way in. And as a result of that, he says, Gam Baruch Yeh, he's got the bracha. You know what your position is? Your position is second in command. You now are obeisant to him. Which is, by the way, why when Yaakov comes back from Haran, Esav bugs out. He leaves the country. If brother messes up, then you can take over. Which Chazal read as being the history of Yehuda and Edom, and then later the history of Judaism and Christianity. That's in the Midrashim. So when we look back at it, we realize that's why Yaakov wanted to get the Bechorah. Getting the Bechorah means that I will be the one to take over for the family. And he already proved his ability to do that by exploiting Esav's hunger and Esav's sort of impetuosity to get it from him then. But nobody told Yitzchak, so he had to do it again. And now he proved his resourcefulness, which throughout his life is what he depends on to get him through the hard times. And that's why Yitzchak gives him the bracha. And when Esav says, Havaracha chati l'chavid, you only have one bracha, the answer is yes, because this is not a well-wishing bracha. This is not a bracha of success and harmony and wealth. It's a bracha of singular control over the estate. And that ends up in the hands of Yaakov. And now, hopefully, we understand the whole story a lot better.
I have two questions.
Fire away.
In source number 5, when it says, Vayomer Re'ei Re'ach, Yaakov is saying that to whom? I mean, it looks like Yitzchak and Yaakov are together, right?
Right. Only Yitzchak and Yaakov, right?
Huh?
Right. Yitzchak and Yaakov. And by the way, that's clearly an ironic word, re'ei, coming from a blind man.
Right. Okay.
Okay. I mean,
he's saying it to someone. Look. Right. I understand that it's really a charade, but I've now convinced myself it's okay because he smells, so I have an excuse why I gave it to him.
It could be they say that. By the way, the Rishonim are all quite divided on whether or not Yitzchak was aware of this, or whether he was in doubt and not sure, or whether the whole time he thought it was Esav and he was confused. Almost every possible opinion is out there among the Rishonim.
Okay, and 6, you have the words Barcheni Gam Ani Aviv twice. I mean, why would the Torah say that twice? You have it in the first pasuk there, and then in Lamed Ches.
You mean why Esav says it twice?
Yeah.
Because
why does the Torah record it twice?
Right. So in the beginning, he says, give me a bracha. I also should get a bracha. And then Yitzchak expresses the notion that I've already installed Yaakov in that place. He says, okay, at least give me something. It's like a fallback. And the answer is, okay, you got a fallback, but the fallback isn't much of a bracha. It's more of a mishaberach, as we call it.
Can I jump in?
Sure, please.
Yeah, so maybe I'm a little confused because the story refers to both the birthright and blessings.
Right, the birthright is in chapter 25 and the blessings in chapter 26.
So how would you differentiate between the birthright and the blessings?
The birthright is the position, meaning Esav is born first, and therefore Esav sort of automatically is the one who's going to control the estate, unless he blows it. He hasn't blown it. He's actually performed perfectly for that job throughout his life. Yaakov, at a fairly early age, wants to get that right away. And so therefore he negotiates and takes advantage of Esav's hunger and gets it, which means technically he has ke'ilu a deed, whatever, some form of proof that he's got the rights of the Bechor. But he can't show that to Yitzchak. Yitzchak's not clued in on that story. Just like Rivka clearly never told Yitzchak about her prophecy and that the older will serve the younger, right?
Right,
she didn't.
But now, then does that not beg the question? Because it's one thing to, you know, to dispute who has the birthright. It's another thing for Yitzchak to give both of his sons a blessing.
Right, so he gives both of his sons a blessing because the blessing he was going to give Esav the whole time was the one we saw there, which was power over the family, the estate. The bracha,
which is tantamount to the birthright, correct?
Yes, yes. Okay. And then he was going to give Yaakov the bracha of, you are the ones going to carry on the Abrahamic tradition. You're going to inherit the land, you're going to have lots of kids. That's the whole bracha Rechat Abraham. What happens is that Yaakov, unbeknownst to Yitzchak, has technically gotten the rights over the Bechorah. I think the way we have to read it is, Yaakov never could have gone as far as he did in chapter 27 if it weren't for chapter 25. Meaning if he didn't already have the legal right to the Bechorah, he couldn't have gone ahead and done that masquerade. Now, by the way, this is something that Yitzchak now learns. Who does he learn it from? He learns it from Esav. Because when Esav comes in and complains, then he says, that's why his name is Yaakov. He's ambushed me twice. First he took the Bechorah. And now if you're Yitzchak, you're hearing that. And suddenly, as we say in Hebrew, Hasimon Nofel. How do you say that in English? The penny drops. Suddenly everything becomes clear. In other words, here's Yitzchak, and he's maybe confused, saying, how is it that Yaakov had the temerity to come in, pretend to be Esav, and get the bracha, mapitom? And then when Esav, he's the one, he's just talking inadvertently and says, yeah, Yaakov, he stole my bechora, now he stole the, suddenly Yitzchak's saying, oh, now I get it. The whole time, Yaakov's been the one who should have been getting this. Because he...
So does Yitzchak ever give a blessing to either one that mirrors the blessing that Lavan and Rivka's mother gave to Rivka? You know, you'll be numerous and you will be at the gates of your foes.
Yeah,
you know?
That's the same bracha
to
Esav. He thought it was Esav, the Tiyako. It's a bracha of power and of subjecting your fellows to you, being in control. Yeah. Different words, but same idea. That's why I put it in there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, is that why he's deceived by Lavan? Kind of karma.
Oh, the midrashim go to town on this. I'll tell you one midrash that is just like, but in a sense, it's almost pshuto shel mikra. When Yaakov marries Rachel, it turns out to be Leah. The next morning, he comes to Lavan and says, "What did you do? I worked for Rachel." And Lavan says in the text, says, "Lo ye'ase chein b'mekomenu latet atzira lifnei abechira." In our place, we don't do this, putting the younger before the older. And there's a clear shot there where he's saying, and whether Lavan said it or whether the text is saying it, but there's a clear shot at Yaakov saying, maybe where you are, you guys give brachot to the younger in place of the older, and you cheat and you lie. We do everything straight. First the older girl, then the younger girl. But the Midrash is even more powerful. The Midrash, Bereshit Rabbah here says that when Yaakov woke up that morning and he saw Leah, he says to Leah, how could you do that? All night I was cooing, Rachel, Rachel, and you were answering yes, yes. How could you lie to me? She says, big shot. And the whole time your father was saying Esav, Esav, and you were saying yes, yes. It's like,
really? Who are you to question that? Exactly.
But and it's also the karma bit. It's coming back. And by the way, so much of Bereishit is about that, especially in the Yaakov and the Yosef cycles, is about what goes around comes around. And a lot of it starts right here with this story of deception and of garments. And, you know, the brothers then bring the father Yosef's garment to make him think he's dead, right? And Tamar dresses up to make Yehuda think she's somebody else. It's a constant theme, and it starts right here. It's good stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you guys before we – do you want to have Shear next week? It's Erev Thanksgiving. We traditionally don't have Shear, but, again, I don't know. I'm not going away this year. So
I'll be in the road. I can call in. So actually, I'm fine with that.
All right. So I'll have Anna put out an email feeler, and you'll you know see how many people want to come. But I'd be happy to give Shear.
You were going to connect this to the campaign stuff when we talked about this.
Yeah, I was, and then I decided not to.
Okay.
I'll tell you why. Because I heard. I'll tell you honestly. I heard from several students and family members about different teachers who were sharing their political opinions. A little before and during and in the extended during the election. And I realized it's just really a bad idea. It's really a bad idea.
I don't mean an opinion. Like, for example, there just seems there's so much dialogue that puts the integrity of the role into play now that never really existed before. And so therefore, like if you're religious and you look to the Bible to give you guidance, you say, well, how much do I weigh the moral integrity versus policies, if you will.
I'll tell you an interesting feedback that I got from last week's Shear. Last week's Shear was about where the Avot lived, right? Be'er Sheva and Hebron. And what I presented was that their choice to live where they lived was based on where they were in their family. Were they raising kids at the time, in which case you want to get out of town? Or were they interacting with peers, in which case you want to be in the middle of things? And somebody else wrote to me and said, okay, maybe that's the case, but how good of a job did they actually do? And it's part of the broader critique of the Avot as parents, which is, by the way, a critique that doesn't stop with the Avot. It continues through Tanakh. And really, the only person we seem to find in Tanakh who is successful as a leader and a parent is Aharon, and there's 50%, maybe, or maybe 100%.
Right.
Moshe's grandson is a coin of Avodah Zarah. Eli's sons are despicable. Shmuel's sons are taking bribes. You know, it's very hard to be both a great public leader and be a great father. That's one of the most amazing things about Rav Lichtenstein. He raised six amazing kids. You know?
Well, that doesn't mean your model is not to be a good father. It just means it's tough.
Well, I understand. So I still think it was a good lesson about, you know, where to live, even though there might be other things. So, okay, Dovi asked the question, so what do you mean? How does it relate to Ephraim and Asher?
Oh, in terms of whether it's appropriate for a younger child to usurp the place of the older child.
Oh, so that's a constant theme in Bereishit. Starts with Cain and Hevel, right? Starts with Cain and Hevel. And the fact that the siyum of Sefer Bereishit sort of is Yisimcha Elim Kefraim Achim Menashe and puts them together, besides the precedence of Ephraim and Menashe, but putting them kind of together is itself kind of a healing of a lot of the terrible things that happened in Bereishit. Cain and Hevel, Yitzhak Yishmael, Esav, Yosef and Reuven. Every generation you find this problem. You even find it with Er and Onan flubbing up, you know, in their marriage. I mean, it's like the Bechor seems to be a real rotten guy throughout. Right? Anyhow. All right, we're going to call it. We'll assume next week, Anne will put out a thing on Monday with the invitation, and we'll put out a special request that people respond. Good. Okay, Kurt, you asked a question here, which was, isn't this the same bracha that Avram got at the Akedah? That's the classic bracha of of kids and the land, and it's just raised to a divine oath. That's kind of like the improvement, shall we say, at the Akedah. Okay, great. Okay, I'll see you guys. Everybody stay safe and healthy.
Yeah.